So let us go to our first topic here. Our false ego is so dear to us. So, as we know, the animal propensities are eating, sleeping, mating, defending, right? And we are meant to keep all of them to a bare minimum, including the defending. Actually, interesting, we can say eating, sleeping, mating, defending, goes from gross to more and more subtle. You know? Eating mainly is a gross bodily satisfaction. Sleeping becomes already a bit more subtle. Mating more subtle. Defending most subtle. Right? Yeah, you can follow or not? Yes. So defending, of course, there's the gross defense of defending the body, but the main defense is actually, centered around the subtle body, defending the false ego. Right? The verbal defense of answering back, having to have the last word, being right, A very, very deep-rooted, strong tendency. Or we don't even realize how much we engage in it on a daily basis. Very difficult to bite the tongue and not shoot back, or defend or something. Very difficult, really. Oof, so difficult, Even if we are wrong. Even if we are accused. No, hang on, the other way around. Even if we are right. No, sorry. Even if we are wrong, yes. Let's say we are accused of doing something wrong and we are wrong, but still the immediate reaction is we defend, right? As a rule. Very, very strong. It's almost like inside we are pushed, to say something for our defense. Ah ja. Ja, ich habe auch mich gefragt, ob die Stühle vielleicht ein bisschen hart sind. Hä?
Ja, für 3 Tage habe ich das nicht aus.
Ja, also ja, gut, dass du einen weicheren Stuhl gefunden hast. Vielleicht hat es da mehrere davon oder
Hat es
so.
mehr?
Vielleicht nach der Mittagspause oder
Ja,
so.
ich finde es okay, wenn man sich so ein Tempelkissen kauft.
Ja, oder so, ja, entweder ein Kissen oder so halt, ne? Wo hast du den gefunden?
Unten auf der Terrasse oder Balkon.
Ah,
Ja.
und da sind noch mehrere.
Noch mehrere, ja.
Also gut.
Und wenn es jemand nicht aushält, ja, endlich gern.
Yes, or you put a pillow on. It might be a little slippery or something. But anyway. Yeah, so that's the thing, Even if we do something wrong, the initial response is defense. Right? As a rule. So even if we do something, even if the accusation is justified, what to speak of if it's not justified? Then of course also, if we are unfairly accused of doing something, immediately we feel, oh, I have to put this straight and right so everybody's clear it was not me who did this and this and this, Let everybody know I was right.
Get them before they get me.
Yes, I mean it's such a strong drive there, This defending propensity, very, very strong, So what we do basically is, because the false ego is so dear to us, we identify so much with it, we are constantly protecting and defending it. But actually, we are meant to do the opposite. We are meant to let go of it. You know, we want to get rid of it. We don't want to maintain it. But unless we clearly understand it, already now it starts, you know, that we are often doing the wrong thing by always defending and protecting, because it is so dear to us, you know, and we identify so much with us with it. But what we should be doing is, we should just let go of it. So actually all these situations where we are actually, which prompts us to defend and protect, we should see them as an opportunity to just let go of the false ego, just let it pass without defending and protecting, you know. Interesting to observe how the false ego, it's almost like some, it's bouncing back and forwards like a ping pong ball. I'm sure we've all had that experience. You know, if somebody comes and blah, 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 you know, accuses us of something, you know, it means like his false ego bounces onto us, and then immediately it inflames our false ego, and we shoot back, you know? And it's almost, it's accelerating, you know? Every argument starts usually like this. It's just the false ego jumping back and forwards and contaminating the heart, right? Classic example is, you know, like in India, in the traffic jams, and some rickshaw driver drives too close to another rickshaw driver, and then the one driver gets angry and explodes. Oh, you know, take your rickshaw away. What are you doing? You know, and then the other one, oh, he answers back, you know, and then they both get out of their rickshaws, beat each other up. You know, you see this in the traffic jams in India, you know, right? Yeah. Yes, quite frequently. So this is what the ego does. You know, it's really, yeah, you can compare it like a ping pong match, you know. It's just bouncing back and forwards, because we all have this false ego there, and immediately it gets ignited, you know, almost like a contagious disease. You catch the ego reaction from the other person, and sometimes we might be wondering, gee, what happened with me? Why did I react like this? I usually am not like this, right? You've had that experience? Yes, I'm sure. And you kind of are puzzled. You think, God, what the hell went on with me, you know? So this is how contaminating the false ego is, that it affects us and immediately ignites, and we respond, unless we are on the transcendental platform. That's actually what it means to be on the transcendental platform, that we don't get affected, you know? But not easy. And in our day-to-day life, that gives us some indication how far we are away from the transcendental platform, actually, you know? So transcendental would be that it doesn't affect us, and we can completely cool and not affected by the ego. We can respond to such a situation, you know, any provocative, challenging situation. So Not easy. Oh, not easy at all, you know. Yes, but basically, now we're already coming to the first tool that a devotee should actually never defend himself or herself. That is actually a rule, a Vaishnav rule, that one should not defend oneself. One should only defend Guru or Krishna or other Vaishnavas, but not oneself. Because there's always that danger there of defending the false ego. But we want to let go of it. We want to dissolve it. So that's why, you know, as a devotee, we should take any provocative situation, we should take it as an opportunity to simply let go of the ego. Because really, most provocative situations, you know, already in the next day or the next week, nobody even worries about it anymore. This is the classic, you know, symptom of all these ego battles, you know. At the very latest, at the moment of death, nobody cares about all these things, you know. That's always the ultimate point of reference, actually, the point of death. There you really can see what is important, what is not important in relationship to the soul, you know. And there we clearly understand all these ego matters. It's almost like part of a separate reality. It's got nothing to do with our eternal existence as spirit soul. No meaning, no significance. So most of all these ego things, really, already a few hours later, a day later, you know, if we can manage to just let go of it, let it pass. Let it pass. Who cares? It's such a relief, actually, and already it's gone and over. But the more we react to it, the more we get contaminated, actually, and we get pulled into a whole thought process of ego reacting and we battling, and, well, we can't hear Krishna and we will be lost. Yes?
Ja. Aber ich habe eine Situation von mir immer im Geist genommen. Ja. If someone, let's say, at working place, teases you constantly, and it's not getting over, it's not stopping and nobody helps you, I might, experience
that. Yes. Yes.
He was teasing me with my food and everything, and at one time I totally cut her off, and I would say it was defending myself, but after this, the relationship was totally nice.
Yes, well, it depends. It very much depends. That, I mean, usually, you know, usually people bring up arguments like this. But first of all, there's two things there. First of all, what from a material point of view might be looking like weakness and being a loser, from a spiritual point of view, it actually is glorious and victorious. No, it means that other people, if they have some little intelligence, they can see, they can recognize the glory of tolerance.
But if they recognize that you are totally angry inside, because you're not on this platform, what do you think?
Well, yes, then, Yes, I mean, That's the thing. It cannot be done. We cannot jump higher than we can, you know. Like one example I can maybe share at this point. In Australia, for many years, the devotees were giving out books for free because it was against the law to sell them and accept money for them in the street. So this is when I joined, you know, 85 or something. So there was, we were collecting during the week money by selling things, paraphernalia sankirtan, it was called in those days. And then on the weekends we were just giving out books for free. And we had this situation there. We were always going to different shopping centers. Every Saturday we were there. And every Saturday this one same man came and he pretended that he wanted a book. And he took it and then he whipped it up. Yes. And of course this is one of the most painful things for a devotee, you know, to see that a person whips up Prabhupada's books and throws them in the bin and all this. But the devotees, every Saturday, the same man was coming, and every time they were giving him the book. And every time the same thing was going on again and again and again. Until one day, that same man thought, let me take this book home and let me have a look what's inside. And he became a devotee and he became a book distributor. And he shared what really affected his heart the most was to see the tolerance of the devotees. That they did not, you know, beat back, that every time they gave him again a book and they simply tolerated, and he thought, these people to behave like this, they must be true saints.
But if you're not on this level yet, should we be still in silence?
How to get on?
Well, anyway, let's not get lost in the details. Let's just keep the ultimate principle and tool in mind. You know, the principle of not defending. Even though here you could say, well, but what about defending Prabhupada or Krishna or so on and so on, you know? So, well, that's the thing. This is what affected this person's heart, what purified him. Because any normal person would have reacted differently. That would have been the normal reaction, to fight back or not to give him a book anymore or something. You know? But that's the purifying power of tolerance. You know? Yes, yes. I mean, it is a pretty amazing story. I read it on Vijay Prabhu's book distribution conference. Yes.
To the same principle that the devotee never defends himself, how about when the service of the devotee gets affected negatively?
Well, see, the point is, it is, let's just give principles. So the principle is better other devotees defend. Not I defend myself, but other devotees. Of course, unfortunately, very often other devotees don't really care that much and they think, oh, well, it's none of my business, you know. But this is not the Vaishnav way of doing things, actually. The Vaishnav mood is, if he sees another devotee unfairly treated or disturbed or something, it is actually his duty to defend, especially when he is a senior devotee, you know. And that is a safeguard, that rule or etiquette is there to protect ourselves of simply being caught up in defending our own false ego. That's That's the point, right? So if it is all right with you, I would not want to get too much into, but what if this, what if that, you know, happens discussion. Unless you feel this is so important for you to understand, otherwise you can't understand the principle or something. But this is basically the principle. A devotee does not defend himself, but he defends other devotees or Krishna or Guru, but not himself. And even if he defends other devotees, Krishna or Guru, that defense will only be effective if it is not done from a false ego platform. That's the point. Because even if we defend others, if it is done with false ego involvement, again, it contaminates the defense, actually. Well, let us, it's not the question of, well, either we do it then completely on the pure platform or not at all, but let's be aware of it, that the false ego is contaminating. You know? That's the point I'm trying to make. That at least we should be aware that if we defend somebody, the more our false ego is involved, the more that defense, our attempt to defend, will be affected. And, well, it can be spoiled even and contaminated. That's the power of this false ego thing, you know? That's, for example, one reason why it is Vaishnav, in Vaishnav etiquette, it is said that actually only a non-envious person should correct others. It's exactly out of this reason, you know, because if we are envious, that means false ego is involved. If we give correction from that mood, it just will not really be accepted by the person, because that false ego thing, oh, you shouldn't be like this, and don't you know, and blah, blah, blah. You know, if we correct like this, even if the correction is completely right and perfect, but through the false ego influence, it will be contaminated. And we might have been in both situations where we receive such kind of correction and we feel, it ignites in us then the false ego, again the ping pong effect there, you know, that we can't accept it. And it actually has a contaminating effect even on us, because then our ego gets all blah going and a whole internal battle there and so on, you know. And for the person giving it also, you know. So it doesn't actually really help anybody, you know. Both get affected and contaminated by it. So, of course, again, it does not mean, well, then we can't instruct anybody or something, you know. But at least we should be aware of it. We should understand the effect, you know. And then if we are in a situation where we have to correct somebody, since I'm understanding these things more deeply now, you know, it's taken me many years or so, you know, because I simply never understood. But now when I'm in a situation where I have to correct somebody, I really observe myself. I don't do it in the spirit of the moment when I'm influenced by my ego and I want to make sure that this is corrected or something. I just say, no, let me wait a few days, you know, because if I do it in that spirit, everything will be spoiled. So let it go, You know, because even there, sometimes we feel this urge of, oh, I have to correct this. You know, I have to respond to this. And usually it is our ego. And if we give that correction in that spirit, nothing will be achieved. It will not be uplifting to the person. And also not to ourselves. Afterwards, we feel all bad about it. You know, so we can feel the contamination in our own consciousness and heart, you know. So that's why better to hold on, to control the tongue, and to just say, okay, let me just cool down and let it pass. It doesn't have to be corrected right now. Let it just go on. And then, you know, when I'm in a good mood and can really give the correction as humble servant, well-wishing friend, and nothing else, then I can give the correction, and then it is nicely accepted. You know? Yes.
My question is, then I should defend some devotee. In this situation, I cannot say, let me wait some days. It's just at the moment I have to defend.
Well, it depends. We have to really see the situation. Sometimes it can wait. Sometimes it can wait. It doesn't have to be done immediately in the spirit of the moment. You would not believe how much it is really the effect of the false ego which makes us think it has to be done right now. You know? And if we really think about it, well, what's the big deal? It can also be done in another day or two, actually. You know, but the ego is so pushing and wants this justice and fairness right now or something. But then often we just don't, you know, our attempts will just not have an uplifting effect, you know. Yeah. Somebody else wanted to say something.
I would like to say it in German. Ich denke, es zielt hier darauf ab, dass Angriff und Verteidigung immer auf der Ebene des falschen Ego stattfinden. Denn vom wahren Selbst her gibt es keinen Angriff und keine Verteidigungssituation. Und im Grunde sollen wir davor bewahrt werden, uns auf dieser Ebene des falschen Egos zu verteidigen oder anzugreifen.
Mhm.
Ich glaube, auch gut gemeinte Verteidigung findet eigentlich, wenn ich es richtig verstehe, auf der Ebene des falschen Egos statt.
Ja, sehr oft.
Und mhm. das Ziel wäre, sich davon zu lösen und sich auf die Ebene des tatsächlichen, auf die spirituelle Ebene zu begeben. Und dann erreicht einen die Kritik nicht und man muss sich auch nicht mehr verteidigen.
Mm.
Das ist natürlich das Ideal, aber so verstehe ich das.
Mm. Mm. I mean, a good example from the Shastra is the story of Sakshi Gopal, you know, where this old Brahmana travels with a young Brahmana, and he feels so indebted to the young Brahmana's service, he promises his daughter in marriage to him. And then when he gets back after his traveling, his family members, they don't agree. And actually the promise was made in front of the deity, in front of Sakshi Gopal. So, and then when they get back, the family members of the old Brahmana, they don't agree because the young Brahmana is very poor. And they say, what? Are you crazy? You know, how can you give this girl to this poor Brahmana? So now, the poor Brahmana, he, because he wants to protect the old Brahmana from breaking his promise in front of the deities, that is his motivation why he is doing something about it. Because he's thinking, my God, how can I let this go, you know, through that this old Brahmana, he has given the promise in front of Krishna. And this will be detrimental to him. This will be such an offense to Krishna. I cannot allow this to go on. You know, so then he goes to Sakshi Gopal and tells him the story. And he requests him to come and be the witness. That the old Brahmana promised that, you know. And then Krishna says, well, but you know, I'm a deity, how can I go there? And then the young brahmana says, well, if you can talk, then you can walk. You know, and then Krishna kindly agrees to go behind him to the village as a witness, and he makes this condition, you can't turn around and see me. You know, so then the young brahmana walks, and then shortly before he comes to the village, he doesn't hear the tinkling of the anchor bells anymore, and then he gets curious after all, and he turns around, and then, you know, Krishna stays there as deity and stops walking. And then he calls all the villagers out and says, see here, he is the witness, he came, you know. So, very nice story which illustrates this, that if this young brahmana, if he had, you know, acted under the false ego, wanting to defend himself and get his right through, well, we can speculate, but I don't think that Shakshi Gopal would have agreed to walk to the village, you know. But because, you know, the motive was really pure, simply being concerned about this old brahmana's promise and, you know, his, you know, bad attitude towards the deity and so on. That's why Krishna agreed to come there, and that's why, you know, the whole defense, even though externally it might have looked like, oh, he is defending him, his situation there, he wants this daughter. No, he was not worried about that. His only concern was, you know, the breaking of the promise, you know. So it's a nice story which really illustrates if defense is there, how it should go, you know. Another nice example, you know, is also King Rahugana. When he was carried in his palanquin there, you know, he was sitting in the palanquin being carried by Jada Bharat, who pretended to be deaf and dull-headed, and he had a bit of a rough ride there in his palanquin because Jada Bharat tried to avoid stepping on the ants. So then initially King Rahugana chastised Jada Bharat. It came from the ego platform there. You know, oh, you fool, why are you walking like this? Don't you know I'm the king here? You know, what is this? You know? So Jada Bharat's answer was completely beyond the ego platform. He did not defend himself. He was not affected, you know. He simply gave, you know, a whole elevated speech there. Yes, my dear king, today you are the king and I'm the carrier, but tomorrow it might be the other way around. Maybe tomorrow I'm the king and you are the carrier. And these are just all false designations in temporary situations, hats here, you know. And then King Rahugana jumped off the palanquin and paid obeisances. Wow, this is an amazing example, you know, of a great soul immediately giving up the false designations and the propensities to defend. You know, the story could have gone completely differently, that King Rahugana defends and says, what? How do you dare to speak like this? Don't you know I'm the king? I'm going to get you arrested and locked up in jail or something, you know, if he had responded on the ego platform. He could have responded like that, you know. But no, he jumps off the palanquin, realizes, wow, you know, my carrier here is actually a great soul and you know, self-realized, and I better bow down to him, you know. So very, very nice example. So therefore, there was no conflict there, you know. But then in examples with Daksha and Indra, you know, whoo, so much fighting back and forwards, you know, and only when Daksha got his goat's head there, that brought him to his senses, you know. with his offensive mentality. We don't have the time to tell the whole story. But there's, you know, plenty of examples in the Bhagavatam where people react on the ego platform and then you get a whole conflict, you know. Or then the example of King Rahugana, who just immediately jumps off the palanquin and realizes and gives up these false designations. And yeah, and then the whole situation is uplifting for everybody involved, for King Rahugana, you know, for Jada Bharat, who gets an opportunity to preach, for us to hear the nice, you know, speeches of Jada Bharat and so on, and the whole situation is uplifting and beneficial to everybody involved, you know. Yes. I quoted a few nice things there, a few numbers of verses. Basically, it leads us to the understanding how important tolerance is. You know, the quality of tolerance, so, so important. Because tolerance means we are resisting, you know, the pushings of the false ego, that we are not defending, protecting, whatever, demanding, you know, but we are simply tolerant. Tolerance is based on simply, you know, not reacting to the demands and pushings and orders of the false ego. That's what tolerance means, you know. So unless we develop tolerance, not possible to really dissolve our false ego, you know. There's a few nice, I collected a few nice, you know, things what Prabhupada says about tolerance. Is this too much hearing for you, or are you with me? Yes? I don't know how else to present these topics, you know, except just talking. Sorry. I'm sorry that you have to tolerate. But ultimately, I mean, this is also how we are meant to actually get spiritual knowledge, you know, by somebody sharing something, you know. It is descending or not ascending the process, really, you know, so what can I do? Here in 1.18.48, there's a verse, it says, the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. Hoo hoo. Yeah, well, in Christianity you find the same principles. Isn't there also one verse in the Bible, you know, if you hit on one cheek, you should show the other, you know? So this is basically what we are saying. Not defending. Not defending. You know? And again, from a material point of view, it looks like weakness. It looks like we are defeated. You know? But from a spiritual point of view, it's victorious. It's glorious. And people, if people are a little intelligent, they can see. You know? They can see. And it will increase their respect and their admiration. They maybe are too chicken, too mental to express it, you know. But really, tolerance is always victorious. It is. It is. At the latest, at the moment of death, when we have learned to dissolve our false ego and happily go back to Godhead, you know. While the person who's always defending, you know, well, his ego will not be dissolved, and he's going to have to do another round in the material world, you know, ultimately, you know. So it is, you know, we can say, of course it does, you know, we are not judging anybody here now who is defending or something, so don't take it personal or anything. But, yeah, it is simply, if we can, and that's the point I'm trying to get across, if we can understand all these provoking situations in our daily lives, which we are all facing, if we can see them as Krishna's mercy in order to give us an opportunity to tolerate and let go of our ego, you know, ultimately we will be so much more happy and peaceful, you know, and we will be going back to Godhead. Our lives will become so much more harmonious. That's the point, you know. Here is also an interesting purport, 4.19.34. I also got that number there on your sheet. The verse is, we should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangement, we should not be very sorry. The more we try and rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the deep, darkest region of materialistic thought. Yes? Let me read the purport. It will explain it more. Sometimes the saintly or a very religious person also has to meet with reversals in life. How do you translate reversals?
Rückschläge.
Super. Rückschläge. Exactly. Rückschläge. Very good. Such incidents should be taken as providential. How do you translate providential?
Vorhergesehen,
hätte ich auch gemeint. Mm. Although there may be sufficient cause for being unhappy, one should avoid counteracting such reversals. For the more we become implicated in rectifying such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest regions of material anxiety. Lord Krishna has also advised us in this connection. One should tolerate things instead of becoming agitated. Maybe I can share one little example, which I experienced a few years ago when my father left his body and I inherited some little money, and somehow the taxation department unfairly charged me some taxes which I was actually not supposed to pay. But I had a 3 months time period where I could respond to this, and I missed this because I didn't get the letter. I was somewhere in Bangladesh or something and I didn't know about it. So that the time period where I could object was gone, you know. So and then when I came back and I realized, oh, you know, what is this, you know, these rascals. So I was wondering what to do, you know, so I rang them, and immediately the woman there on the phone, you know, she, you know, oh, you know. And, well, and I was thinking, so what to do, you know, and immediately I felt this whole contamination on me, you know, even just being absorbed in the whole issue, I just felt so contaminated, you know, just this whole fighting, so what to do, you know, I have to go to court or what, you know. So I just decided, and of course I could feel that my ego was really agitated, you know, about being unfairly treated here and charged. I mean, I was perplexed how in Germany, you know, the taxation department was so rude. It really looked like they purposefully were screwing the whole meanings of things in the testament in such a way that it sounded like I inherited twice as much and therefore was supposed to pay this tax, which was ridiculous. I mean, it was really, you know, it was almost like thievery or something, you know, really. I had the feeling these people were trained to, you know, cheat people or something, you know. And of course, this immediately agitated my false ego quite a bit, as you can imagine, you know, and all you think of is how to get your right, you know. But again, this is simply false ego matters, you know. At the time of death, who cares how much tax you paid there or something? It's simply irrelevant to the reality of the soul being eternal servant of the Lord. It has no relevance to this, actually. You know, it's really part of the nonsensical stage performance, nothing else. You know, so then once I realized, all right, let me just pay it, let him have it. You know, and it took me a few days, you know, for the ego to digest it and come to terms. But I could just feel so such a relief, you know, as soon as I thought, all right, let it go. No need to try and rectify and fight back and, oh, you just get caught up in a whole thing there of material anxiety and contamination. Not worth it. No need to destroy your bhajan like this with all this kind of, you know, responses. So, and then I just thought, all right, let him have it. And a week later, I had forgotten the whole story and it was gone, you know. So just as, of course, you can say, well, but what about if you don't have the money or something? Well, no need to get into detailed discussions. But just as a principle, you know, what Prabhupada is saying here in the purport. So some unfortunate things might be happening, but the more we are able to not get caught up in counteracting them, you know, the better we are off, actually, because this counteracting, we get caught up in material contamination and anxieties, you know. Yes? Any comments about that?
Right.
I mean, other people would...
similar
things. Yes, yes.
And eat the money when you get happy with it, maybe oil and vinegar, you know, eat it.
Yes, 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 yes. But other people might say, oh no, how can you allow this? And it's your right. And even you could say, well, it's Krishna's money or something. But still, you know, well, things don't happen. It's not a coincidence. You know, so there's certain reasons why certain things happen, and I just was thinking to myself, I haven't paid much taxes as it is in my life because I'm not even registered anywhere as living, you know, because I'm not living anywhere, I'm living out of a suitcase, so all right, let him have it, you know. Yes, very, very good point. And Prabhupada's fighting was, of course, not from the ego platform. He was fighting like the poor Brahmana, you know, simply wanting Sakshi Gopal's promise scene to go on. That's why he was victorious. Yes. But that's a very high platform. Very high platform. You know, once we realize how subtle the ego is always prompting us to act, we realize how far we are away from that. We cannot imitate. We cannot say, yes, Prabhupada was fighting, so woohoo, here I am, I will fight. You know? Yeah. We can't be surprised if we don't get the right result then, you know? And we definitely will get all contaminated. Although Prabhupada, of course, also, he was accepting all headaches and anxieties. But in the ultimate issue, it did not affect him. You know, because he could distinguish between these two realities of my relationship with Krishna and, you know, the nonsensical stage performance of the material world. And he was simply acting, you know, on behalf of Krishna. And and it did not affect his consciousness, you know. Anybody else? I have one more thing mentioned here. Yeah, and simply a nice definition of what tolerance is. That's 11 Canto 19th chapter 36 to 39 or 38. In the purport it says there, tolerance means to patiently endure unhappiness such as that provoked by the insults or negligence of others. So being insulted or neglected, this is very difficult to tolerate for the false ego, neglect or so, you know. One must also sometimes accept material inconvenience to carry out the injunctions of scriptures, and that unhappiness must also be patiently endured. So it's simply a nice definition of what it means to be tolerant, you know. It means to patiently endure unhappiness. Ja, erdulden, ertragen. Such as that provoked by insults or negligence. You know, if the classic example is if we are insulted, you know, oh, such strong urge there to shoot back and so on. But if we can tolerate, that shows spiritual strength, you know. In fact, it is said a devotee's spiritual strength can be measured in how tolerant he or she is. That's a criteria for spiritual strength, because it means, you know, you're not on the false ego platform. You know? Yes. And of course the classic examples are always Haridas Thakur, Prahlad Maharaj, you know, being so, you know, attacked and trying to be killed and whatever not, you know. Classic example, not defending. You know? Classic examples. That's really the criteria for spiritual strength, yes? Yes, that's how we should see it. Yes, yes. Well, that's how I kind of dealt with this whole taxation thing, you know, that I thought, all right, sometimes the money comes and sometimes it goes. And, you know, and it, obviously this is what I was meant to give, you know, and what I'm owing here or something. All right, let it be, you know. Yes. Yes, that's the mood of a Vaishnava, that, you know, we come to that again later, you know, when tomorrow, I think, when we discuss this feeling of being offended, you know, that this is really a false ego thing, that Vaishnava mood is always, actually, I'm deserving much more than what I'm getting, but Krishna is so kind, he only gives me one drop of what I really deserve. You know, that's actually the Vaishnava mood, yes, yes, yes. And all these things are there simply to help us cultivate this tolerance in order to let go of this false ego, because otherwise we can't go back to Godhead. That's the point, you know. If we want to get out of here, if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to let go, we have to dissolve the false ego. Otherwise, subtle body will take us to another gross body, and we have to do another round here, you know. So that's the spiritual vision of all these provocative situations. Once we understand the whole workings of the ego more deeply, we will deal with all these situations differently. We will accept them as a good opportunity to let go of the ego. Yes. Yes. And of course, this is all very high and difficult, not so easy. But the first step is always just to hear about the topics and to understand and to try and make a bit of a paradigm shift there, you know, in the consciousness, you know. Yeah.
Does it really work in this mechanic way? Isn't there any grace from Krishna?
Say it again.
Does it really work in this mechanic way? Isn't there any grace from Krishna?
Yes, of course.
Without grace, we can't be saved.
Yes, yes. And on the last day, we will get more deeply into the, you know, today and tomorrow, we simply discuss some practical tools in our daily life, but on the last day will come the final ultimate tool. So we'll park it until then.
Of course, the tolerance of Prahlad and Hari Thakur was natural.
Yes.
If I would be there, it would be unnatural.
Yes. But we have to discuss what is the star in the sky we should be shooting for, you know? And as I said, on the last day, we will understand more, you know, how the process of Krishna consciousness can bring us there if we apply it properly, you know? But these little tools like not defending, they're almost falling into the category of Vaishnav etiquette or Vaishnav, simply Vaishnav behavior. And there's always, in discussion with etiquettes, you always have this point that initially it might be a little external and artificial. But then as you develop, as you have the right desires of wanting to develop certain qualities, the external thing gradually will become internalized, right? Even, you know, like the etiquette of Vanchakalpa-dhu-vishya, paying obeisances in the beginning, you know, feels rather external and artificial, and, you know. But then as we are simply accepting the etiquette and doing it, acting on it, parallel to the desire of wanting to cultivate humility and respect, then eventually it will become internalized and we actually feel there's something wrong if we don't pay obeisances or something. But it takes a while, you know, it takes a while. But if we simply only do the external thing without desiring to develop the quality, you know, then, you know, then it just remains on the external thing, you know, and then it will simply remain there and never get any deeper than that, you know. Yeah, so time is basically up. Anyway, we can conclude and wrap it up by saying that Krishna actually gives every day, gives us opportunities every day almost to dissolve our false ego, you know. But often, because we don't recognize, easily we can do the opposite of what we should be doing, you know, getting caught up in defending rather than understanding. Yes, let me just let it pass by, let it go, you know. Especially married life, for those who are married, they know married life is the battlefield for false egos. Isn't it?
Yep.
It really is. I mean, my God, you know. Oh, I've been married 10 years myself, so I remember from my own life, you know. You know, one wastes so much time and energy with all little disputes there, which really are all, or most of them, are really of that nature that already the next day or the next week, who cares? It's already passed. Nobody even talks about it anymore, you know. But at that moment, we take them all so seriously, and the false ego is prompting us, and blah, and it goes back and forwards, and you know. It's really the classic thing is really, and this is also, I'm also realizing it only because I'm delving more into this topic. This is really one reason why this married life is so purifying, you know, or it is meant for purification, you know, because there we learn not to take these false ego battles so serious and not to engage in them, you see. Yeah, that's the thing. Krishna's system to dissolve our false ego in practical life. Last little thing there on your sheets. For the female vehicle, it is really, Krishna's system is to that we put ourselves below a husband or men as a class within society. This is for all those spirit souls who are driving the female vehicle. This is the perfect system. It's Krishna's system. Male and female gross body is different, and the subtle body also, by the way. Male mind, intelligence, thoughts, ego, very differently composed than the female mind, intelligence, and thoughts, ego. And they are so, again, according to Krishna's divine plan, so that both can play a certain role in life within Krishna consciousness to keep life stable and harmonious and peaceful and have a solid foundation there within human society, the stability, so we can all wholeheartedly endeavor to develop our relationship with Krishna and get out of here. So for all those living entities in a female body, that's the best and surest way, really, to dissolve our false ego by putting ourselves below, best a husband, because usually Krishna is too far away, Guru is too far away, but husband is there, you know. So we basically practice on the husband or men in general how to dissolve our egos, how to give up our independence. That's kind of Krishna's system there, you know. So now, of course, the question comes up, what about for the man? What's Krishna's system for the man? Well, it's definitely not the system that the wife tries to smash the man's ego or something. That's definitely not the system. Or any woman trying to smash the ego of any other man or something. That's not the system. No, for all those conditioned souls in the male vehicle, their egos get dissolved by working with other men. Right? Does that make sense? Because, just in a real nutshell, we don't have the time now, the male ego by nature is stronger, so he can take charge and be the provider and the protector. He needs actually that, in the same way how the male body is stronger built, you know, broader shoulders, bigger muscles. This is there, so he can play the role of protecting, providing, right? And taking charge. Somebody has to do it, right? So that's the male role. And his ego is also stronger to play that function, you know. But then by playing the function within Krishna consciousness, it gets purified, hopefully, you know. So naturally, you know, we can imagine so many male vehicles there with stronger egos, all wanting to take charge and provide and protect and lead. So this is going to lead to clashes there, right? So the purifying system that Krishna has given for all those in the male vehicle is that cooperation with other men. We will get into that a little bit more tomorrow afternoon in the giving and accepting shelter topic. The difficulty of cooperating with those of equal influence, most purifying for the false ego, you know, with those who have similar influence and control, there we show whether we are true servant or whether we want to dominate, you know. So that gives the purifying effect there for those in male vehicles. But it's also there in you know, in women's lives too, the difficulty of cooperating with equals. And I mean, the classic example is really, just to illustrate a little bit more, the example of Prabhupada's godbrothers, you know, who could not cooperate. They all rather preferred to be the head of their own little mat there and their own little Gaudiya mat branch than cooperating with the godbrothers. You know, and because of that, whole Bhaktisiddhanta's mission was spoiled. The whole Gaudiya mat was ruined. You know? Shows very powerful example, you know, how subtle and strong the ego is and how everything can be lost. You know? How it says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says. You know? So even on that level, on that plane, this is going on, you know. Okay, 10 to 2, I'm sorry to go a little over time. May I ask you to do one final quick personal exercise? Turn to your neighbor and share the realization of this morning. What you have gotten out of this. It's good to finish on that note because we do want to get something out of this. And I hope you've gotten something out of it. So please share. By sharing, you become more conscious of it.